Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. It's the Sunday Show on Here Be Monsters. I'm Gwen Berry, and with me today, of course, is Jack Jodell from Minneapolis. You know, Jack, I just got tongue-tied because I couldn't think of putting Minnesota before Saturday Afternoon Post, so I give Saturday Afternoon Post, and our guests with us tonight are from the Roundtree7.com blog. And, of course, Manny is also with The Independent. We have Manny Jalonsky and David Williams. And today's topic, guys and gals out there, is something that really needs to be talked about. Our community, our activist community, and progressive, left, socialist, green, Occupy. Some people...
Alternative.
Yeah, alternative. Some people still hold on to Democrat. But this community needs some well, we need to show a little love is what it's about.
Yeah.
And I'd like to introduce the conversation this evening with Manny and the post that he just made at Roundtree 7, which is it's really well-spoke, and it I think mirrors many of our minds and hearts out here in a community. Both he and David have been speaking along the same lines here for a while. And so, Manny, if you would talk about your confessions there.
Well, you know, we all aren't really new to this. Folks out on this sort of roundtable could probably lap me in their time in activism and their time in sort of fighting local struggles, national struggles. So other folks here could probably speak with more flavor and experience to this, but my experience for like the last 15 years has sort of led me to this newer thing that's happened recently. And what I'm basically saying, to quote, let's try to engage in conversations so that they progress towards solutions, not towards imagined ego or rhetorical victories. If your ideas are that strong, invest in the time to develop a way to approach others so that they're actually interested in, not disgusted by, what you have to say. What I'm trying to say is we need to sort of occupy a little bit of understanding for the other people that are coming to the struggle, much like we're approaching the struggle with our own limitations that we don't even know about and a lot of limitations that we do know about. We have to sort of keep aware that everyone else is approaching this sort of roundtable or this crowd discussion with their own limitations. So we're not simply diffusing the empire. We're not simply diffusing bad politics. We're not simply diffusing bad culture. We're also diffusing sort of bad habits of being with each other. So one of the reasons, and just taking a semi-historical analysis on this, I feel like, you know, in the last 2 years, 3 years, Americans have revived popular democracy here. This is the way we did it before World War II, and it's the way we did it 100 years before that. And it's how we sort of fought a lot of things. Like, we got the kids out of the factories. We got, you know, equal rights to vote. It took a while. See, this is how we fought old school. Big, big, broad, broad fights. And we sort of need to bring it back to that. What's happened, though, is we are new at this again. We're new at this again. We've forgotten how to do it. And in the last 3 years, we sort of had to reengage in broad social struggle. Well, now we're back at this sort of point 1.9. That last point before we make it to 2.0, we can start going into a wider social movement. And what's sort of keeping us there is maybe perhaps our limitations on thinking about activism ourselves. Either and this is exactly what my column's about. I've noticed a habit now that we've become a little more veteran in day-to-day street struggles, online, actual organizational struggle. I notice we're starting to get a little bit of ego problems, or we're starting to get a little territorial with our opinions, or worse, we're starting to get a little destructive and repulsive in the way we put out our ideas. And that is inherently anti-democratic. That is inherently anti-leftist. That is inherently anti-human. That is inherently anti-communal or community. Why? Because we are creating a two-tier system for ourselves where we say we understand and they don't. So my column, which is basically a 400-word rant on folks, we need to sort of occupy some understanding for others and their limitations as well in the struggle. If we need to make space for each other. If we can watch CNN despite the BS to go find one or two links that we need, then we can definitely put up with each other's BS. We can definitely take a 20% understanding or 50% understanding. Mm-hmm. Learn to forgive, because these are our allies, not the corporations.
Yeah,
right.
You can't attack your friends because they won't be your friends too long, and you may even push them over the enemy. You don't want to have that happen. Or I shouldn't even say enemy, just the other side.
Yep, and see, here's the thing. That doesn't work to our favor. That doesn't work to the person we're pushing away's favor. It only works in the favor of the guy who split us up. You know, mm-hmm. their force is in coagulating or putting together all their capital. Our force is in coagulating or putting together each other.
Right.
So every time we lose one of us, and these useless sort of like slap fights about you're a neo-Trotskyist and I'm a social democrat, and you're both freaking sellouts because you vote third party, every time
good
we
point.
Lose each other in these slap fights, we've actually lost the bigger struggle to break up big capital, big agro.
The key is unity and
finance.
Solidarity above all else, unity and solidarity, and you have to allow a certain amount of individuality within that mix. And I think that's what you're coming to, Manny. And it makes a lot of sense to me.
If you're trying to bring information to someone that may be undecided, you know, if you're trying to bring knowledge to change public opinions, then you know the best way to do it is to let them form their own opinion, not try to force your opinion on them, then get mad if they don't come to the same conclusions. You present the facts, and you know you got to go out there and almost in a way try to preach the information, try to bring the light out there, and you know change other people to the opinions that needs to be changed to. You know, you can't just have it where you know, you're saying Obama's a bum or something like that and expect other people to either like it or not like it. And if they don't, you know, they just run away from you.
It's evil if they don't, you know.
Exactly.
If they're not diametrically opposed to you, you're still on the same side, and we need to remember that. We need to remember that there's usefulness to solidarity, and that every time people on the left fight, it aids the right, and we cannot have that.
Yeah, the way you build power is you build cohesion. You build groups together, and you know, you form a binding group that doesn't allow the little petty things to come between them. And mm-hmm. I've seen it time and time again where these, like Manny said, these little slap fights, and suddenly they're not talking to each other, or you know, they've blocked each other or something like that, and it's very destructive.
It is.
If we could, you know, one of the things that sort of happened is, folks maybe should remember the early 70s. Now, one of the ways, and, you know, check Congress because it's available now, one of the ways COINTELPRO worked was by encouraging, instead of cooperative activism, they encouraged what? Competitive activism, like a freaking sport. You feel me? Like, I'm the best activist. Man, I'm such a better socialist than you are. Please, I'm a way better human rights activist. These are farcical. That's a different thing than the struggle. That's sort of like
ego,
trying to win a medal.
Ego-driven stuff is deadly. You can't have ego. You got to leave your ego at the door. No matter, I don't care if you're in a church group, if you're in a sports team, I don't care where you're at. Leave your ego. Let's have a little humility and a little open ears. That's what we need. I think that's what you're referring to, Manny, isn't it?
Absolutely. And the thing is, these uncomfortable spaces between us, If we sort of dissipate them, if we neglect them, if we make fun of them, if we treat them like shit, frankly, and we use each other, these uncomfortable spaces where we disagree, if we use it to sort of put each other down, we're actually giving up a huge opportunity.
Right.
This is sort of like how trust bonds are built. You know, your neighbor doesn't have the religion you do, but for Thanksgiving, you showed him a turkey leg, and you're like, here, buddy, have one. This is what it means to be in a community, man. We draw strength from our diversity because we have several common basic narrative mechanisms. We want our communities to better through cooperative action, not competitive action. And this is sort of, it goes up and down a little bit, because we can actually draw, as the movement gets bigger, we're going to draw ego hounds. Well, if we were really, really democratic, it'd be 1 in 1,000 voices, and they would have no virtue in it. But if we set up quickly hierarchical, ego-bound sort of systems, you know what I mean? then that guy rises to the top. We really kind of need to watch not just for egos, but am I here to be the second best progressive, the sixth best socialist, or am I here to make sure that we have a daycare at my corner?
Right.
Am I here
good
to make
point.
Sure that the books in my middle school aren't bought in some bigot-ass district in Texas?
Right.
Well, you know, there's
a tendency for people to go polar opposites, and that's so ridiculous. You know, you somebody makes a statement, and then somebody immediately, oh, so you mean this, when they don't mean that at all, and people should know better, really, and they shouldn't jump to conclusions. That's what it is, jumping into conclusions and ramming it down somebody's throat. We can't have that. That's counterproductive.
Well, I've noticed, and I know, Manny, you have, and David, that especially where we communicate so freely with one another on the social networks, and I am talking about the Facebook thing, it seems very easy for everyone to agree to be angry. And what I think David is saying, and David, I'm going to turn this to your direction for a second, you're saying, I think that much like just the same as Manny is, but in different words, you're also saying that if we make the hero the peacemakers or the unifiers and show the strength in that, like much like how Owls started out and grew so quickly by people just saying, hey, I'm joining because I like what's might for right, you know. Geez, there we go, round table, might for right. Is that what
you... Yeah, that's pretty much what I was saying. And the thing is it's human nature to sort of develop, I guess, what you would think your kingdom or whatever. And and it's easy to let your ego sort of take control and... not allow any kind of difference, you know, sort of like a pack dogs, you know, biting at the ones that sort of stray off course a little bit. Mm-hmm. But you got to think of what the end goal is. The end goal is try to provide a common goal that everybody searches for, and get past these little petty differences and try to achieve something.
Right.
And you cannot achieve something by sort of whittling away, you know, the people that have any slight difference of opinion, whether it be definitions of socialist or whatever, any slight definitions of opinion, until you only have a small group that agrees exactly 100% with what you're trying to say.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to go out there and sort of preach a little bit. I hate to use that word again, preach, but you have to go out there and be among the street and try to bring people that are undecided into your cause as well.
Well, you have to state
and you can't
your
do that by
in
being
a
abrasive.
Non-offensive manner. You just have to state your case non-offensively.
Yeah, exactly. You state the facts, and you allow that person to form his own opinion.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And a lot of people don't. A lot of people aren't getting that. They're fighting their opinion, not fighting. You know, they're fighting other people trying to get them to force it to their opinion. They're not presenting any facts and say, okay, here are the facts of whatever, you know, and form your own opinion about it and, you know, become one of our group, not try to be like an opinion beatdown where, you know, you either are with us or you're against us and we're going to kick you out or whatever. You have to try to work with people that may have a slight difference of opinion and build coalitions a little bit.
Yeah. Well, there's always room for diversity, and people that are absolutists, they say it's my way or the highway. That's what we see so much from the Republican Congress. And where does that get anybody?
But that doesn't mean that you have to dilute your opinion, though. You know, people get away from that and say, okay, if I'm not angry and mad and all this stuff, I'm not quite opinionated enough. And there's a difference between trying to present other people the facts and having your own opinion and agreeing that softness of approach to other people, trying to convince them.
Mm-hmm.
Is not diminishing your opinion. You don't have to be mad and angry to have convictions.
You don't have to yell to be heard.
That's right, yeah.
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 All you need to do is state your case and do it objectively and do it fairly and do it with an open mind. And if others perceive it that way, they're going to be a lot more likely to listen to you. If you're yelling at people, if you're constantly screaming and ranting and raving, you know, you're going to turn people off. It's plain and simple. It's human nature. People are going to walk away from a conflict. They're not going to stay part of it. And I think
And not only that, it brings fatigue to the person that's trying to deliver the message. I mean, after a while, I mean, I can only speak for myself, but, you know, after a while, it just, it, you know, becomes debilitating when you have your 101 argument against whatever, and you know, you're not really changing anybody's mind. You're just going back and forth and trying to win an argument. It's mm-hmm. it's harmful to yourself as well. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really present any progress on the cause that you're trying to be for.
Yeah, well, you know, FDR once said years ago, you know, well before our times, but he said, and it's very true today even, he said, there are many ways to move forward, but only one way to move backward. And he was referring to how the Democrats were in the 30s fighting amongst themselves, as they were from time to time, and why the Republicans seem so unified. Well, you know, it's very true. There are many ways to go forward, but only one way to go backward. And just because you're going forward at a different pace or a different angle or a different way than everybody else doesn't mean you're not still going forward and that they can't help you or join you or be with you at least part of the way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense.
You know, I think David also hinted at something kind of a big unspoken part of the issue here. Look, you know, sometimes when I sit back, it's almost like a myopic Scrabble game or a big fracas in an anthill when, like, the tsunami's coming. Well, folks, you know, I hate to say it, we're the minority here, you know. Mm-hmm. Not just, I mean, liberals and Democrats and socialists, and you get all the anarchists together. I'm sorry, folks, we're the minority. And, mm-hmm. like, when you actually whittle it down to issue by issue, we don't have an informed vast critical mass. We don't have like an 80% population. So what we're kind of sort of doing is, and you guys hinted at this so well before, you know, we're kind of like using our energy, in business they call this an opportunity cost, we're using our energy on each other, and then we're pretty exhausted, and we can't do, as David says, some good old-fashioned proselytizing.
Right.
We should be beating the Jehovah's Witness at their game, man. We
yeah,
should be
right.
at the doors and like, you want health care? This is what you need to know. You can run it yourself. You know, we need to be really real about this. And, you know, we are very, very much a minority. We can sit in our cities and stuff like that, but we have a vast, big, big game ahead of us. Perhaps less fighting over which one of us is, like, the best social democrat is in order. And I love this about the conversation we're having now. Perhaps mm-hmm. what's in order is, let's see who can bring more people to the movement in a way that makes the movement more intelligent, and more
right.
democratic, because now we do have all these other new voices in there.
Good point. You know, another
exactly.
point on absolutism,
exactly.
you know,
very well
you're never going to get 100% of everything you want. You know, you've got to allow for a certain amount of not getting there, you know, and you still strive for the best, you still strive for excellence, you strive for perfection, and that'll help you achieve excellence, and that's the best you can achieve, because you will never ever, I don't care what the endeavor is, you will never, ever achieve perfection. So we just strive for excellence. That's what we're going to do. That's what we need to do. And if we do that, we're going to be rewarded.
Well, we have the advantage of having the facts on our side. If you present the facts
right.
and you assume that someone's not, you know, so dogmatic that they won't look at facts, then
right.
You have a possibility of changing their mind. And
right.
you know, if not, there probably wasn't anybody that you could change your mind anyway. So, you know, go on to the next person.
Right.
But you don't backtrack and have the petty arguments, like Manny was saying, have the petty slap fights
yeah.
and start splintering apart the progress that you've made so far.
Yeah, you can't, thou shalt never slap another liberal or moderate or socialist or whatever. Thou shalt not do it, because all it does is work against you. Doesn't that make
sense?
Yeah, that
makes a great bumper sticker. Thou shalt
yeah.
not
shalt. Thou shalt not slap another liberal. That's the way it has to be.
You know, can I push this one further? Like, you know, this is what's sort of great that we're talking about here. What are we losing? You know, like, there's something really deep here, something that's like a problem in our society. We kind of think, like, if, you know, we have these movies where the activist is the loud guy who tells everybody to shut the frick up. You know,
mm-hmm.
we sort of have these corporate even notions of how to be in our community. You know, and I have to say, look, I want to recommend this old book by Eric Fromm called Escape from Freedom, and it's from like 70
yeah.
years ago, and it sounds silly, but it's about how, you know, in a time of very stupid democracy, a bewildered population will eventually say, ah, fuck it, dictatorship. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is...
Yeah, good point.
No, I'm serious, and if you look at it, most Americans, if you talk to them, you'll be like, yeah, well, global warming, you know, there's both sides of the situation. But they can't tell you the details. How many degrees has it changed? how much more carbon dioxide is there in the atmosphere, buddy, if you know so much about both sides? So what happened is we've sort of created this separation that happens in sort of a lazy or I don't even know what judgment to make of our own culture, you know, but a sort of detachment happens of our political discourse from reality. And people won't discuss the political discourse in their reality, and political discourse won't discuss people's reality. What I'm trying to say here is there's like a big thing that happens once we start acting really snobberific and arrogant and holier and mightier and smarter than thou with the stuff that we know and the experiences that we have. It starts making a big gap where these people who know what it is to be a leftist and people who are like, you just don't understand. That's like an acid in our movement that'll break us apart.
Like they always say, you'll catch a lot more flies with honey than you will with vinegar. So people, you know, you got to think before you speak sometimes, too. You just can't just wrap stuff out and boom, 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 and hit people in the way, you know.
I would expect here, gentlemen, too, that most of the folks that we do have our little slap fights with and cross lines and then come back around to one another and all of that within the discourses that we're having, especially in social networking. I mean, most of the folks, if you go into the Journey Roundtree 7 room on Facebook, you will find a lot of very knowledgeable. I don't know anyone in there who really isn't knowledgeable, who isn't working with information, and who isn't, you know, we are sharing a lot of the good points have to be a light, as David says, a light shined on them, too. And I think that if we were working towards sharing that knowledge, that information, you know, it's like I spoke to a PR lady here about an hour ago who has the who has a group down here, and she is only now learning about what we have all known for 2 months about Iceland. But guarantee you that I'll pick someone from the chat room, Janelle Green. I'll bet you she knew all about Iceland for 2 months because she pays attention. She's a knowledgeable lady. She gets that information out and about to folks who are following her feed. But it's also very important to do it in the community and to shine a light on that kind of leadership. I think both David and Manny are saying a lot of that to that right now.
Well, that's a good example because, you know, in the group on Facebook, Journey Around 37, Janelle brings a tremendous amount of information that, you know, these studies and things that, you know, I try to keep knowledgeable for the most part. And she's brought up like this tipping point thing, the social research paper that shows that 10% of becomes a tipping point for any kind of social movement. And she's brought a lot of information to that. And that's where I think that group can shine, is that bringing information and knowledge, because knowledge is what's going to progress the movement. It's not going to be any kind of anger or debates that try to, you know, where you have a winner and loser.
Yeah,
and the only thing that I also want to bring up on that is that I've noticed lately, especially when it comes to this global warming, is there's sort of a new anti-intellectualism that I see going across the country that
green drag.
You know, the facts are showing this, therefore they can't argue against the facts, so they sort of reject science. And that's worrisome to me.
Yeah, I know. That's very disturbing. I understand where you're coming from on that, David, no doubt. But,
yeah, and that's sort of a no-win situation, but, you know, hopefully...
how will we not... You know, in some ways, here's my... if I can put this forward, you know, in some ways, we're the ones left, honestly, to bridge that gap. You know, like Janelle's doing, hey, here's this information. We're the ones left to bridge that gap. You know, we've always talked about this, but it's silly for us to expect an anti-corporate movement to be covered by corporate media. It's silly for us to expect them to carry those things. So we need to go do it ourselves. That being said, what's in our mechanism? If we're driving to being sort of the expertologist of the situation where, you know, our snark food is so much mightier than others, we might not be bringing enough people in. Maybe what we need, and I think David uses a good term here, we sort of like need to go out there and evangelize. We need to be activists and when there's gaps between each other's experiences, maybe honestly that's where we really need to be there for each other. There's a school of activism called situationalism that maybe folks may want to take a look at. And it's sort of, you practice what you want the long game to be together now. You start a co-op, you make sure you treat at least your employees a certain way, you know what I mean, these sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, long-term, if I can make my final suggestion on sort of this one is, you know, let's take it back to when we had really big problems in our communities, like in the 70s and 60s. Perhaps it's time to go to like a conflict resolution model within the left. What are each other's values? What do we value in each other, and how do we step forward from there? I would honestly like folks, if they could, to take a look at how conflict resolution worked in the 60s and 70s in these varied communities, and then see how they compare to sort of how we're just not even acknowledging the value of different points than ours.
Mm-hmm.
That's excellent. That's excellent.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't heard that term used enough, especially in our, let me say, holistic community of all the left side of the street there, conflict resolution protocols. That's excellent.
We can push the envelope here. Where there are problems in our community, we should be there in those uncomfortable spaces where they're doing stuff to folks that aren't you. It's quite different from you. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Show up with, I'm an atheist. I'll show up where the church is fighting stop and frisk, man. You know,
right.
In New York. That's solidarity.
Right.
Because that's a freaking human issue. I don't care if
yep.
they organize in a church to meet me
right.
out there. Well, I organized online. They're not holding that against me. I'm not holding that against them. You know? So that's what
yeah.
I mean by situationalism. Look for
yeah.
where we can liberate each other. And instead of judging where we
good
might
point.
Be 90% better,
good
let's
point.
Both liberate each other 10%, you know?
Yeah, and by doing that, by continually moving in that direction, you're continually
mm-hmm.
pushing everybody along, you know, in a together fashion. That's a great idea.
And
gentlemen,
I have a point to make from the... the chat room, Janelle asked, does anyone see or view that since the 70s, though, that population growth has complicated these value conversations? And before anybody responds to that, I'd like to say, well, I do it in little ways, and I've said this often enough. People know I pull that trick of wearing my Guy Fawkes mask over to the grocery store. I'm still doing it, by the way. I wear it backwards and people ask me questions. Now they're getting to know me for it, but you know what I'm saying.
No,
well,
very true.
Also,
good.
I think that the question that Janelle asked, too, is does the population growth and global warming put a timer on the amount of time that we have left for trying to implement change?
Good point.
It's one thing if you had like a slow pressure that allows eventual growth, but if you look at it from a viewpoint of okay, we got this amount of time left, we have this big egg timer that if we don't get something done, then it may become the point of no return. I mean, what are the opinions on that?
We have to rely on science and industry for a lot of that on that particular topic, I would think, you know. And there are a lot of people that poo-poo that knowledge, but we know otherwise. We know better. So
yeah, but
we have to rely on the facts
they
as they are.
Well.
What's that?
Sometimes science is the problem, though. That's why I'm saying it.
Well, it can
be.
That's
my,
true.
My other concern is sort of when we discuss these things, we're not talking about the laboratory that 50 of us own as a people's co-op down on Market Street in Boulder or over
right.
here out in Queens. We're not talking about that. We're talking about Bristol-Myers Squibb, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. So, well, when we're talking about it, we should always keep in mind that we're discussing sort of like a mechanism that is vastly controlled by them. So I'm with you on both. I know it sounds silly, but, yeah, let's look towards science and industry in some ways to have those solutions. But let's be honest about how many, you know, problems we need solutions for that were actually created by a want and abuse of science. You know, there's plenty of science. The Van Jones plan to create, like, zero-carbon cars out in Detroit was pretty nice. There's plenty of plans, even if you're not into what I'm into, but if you're, like, a social democrat and you want to make plenty of money and have millionaires still, there's plenty of plans for us to do that with science and technology now. But because of that mechanism where the 1% sort of controls it, well, then, they're not going to do that. Their main protocol by law by law, if you're a corporation, is to be profitable, or you will be sued by your stockholders. You will be sued by your shareholders.
Right.
There is like a repeated case history, as a matter of fact. If you're a corporation, you don't have a choice, my dude. That is, you must go for profit ahead of anything. If it means burning this, if it means poisoning that, that is what, you know, what do they call it?
But, you know, I think the nature of corporations have changed over the years, Manny. Corporations have been with us since we've been alive, let's face it. Yeah, but they've grown in importance. They've grown in their demands. They've grown in their aggressiveness. They used to be content with a modest profit. Now they want gangbuster profit at all costs, and they'll stop at nothing to achieve that. They didn't used to have that mentality. Something has happened to the nature of corporate America.
Well, they didn't have that power back then.
I don't think they had the power back then.
Exactly.
That, allowed
that's them
what
to
we're
behave
fighting
like
today.
That.
And that's what we're all fighting today.
Well, we need to...
Well, I mean, also they...
It's
they
a paradigm
of,
shift. We really do. We That
right.
value, we've lost our values, we've lost
right.
our humanity.
Very true.
And I would also point that, like, corporations are themselves a tool of the 1%. Let's not forget there were anarchists in the 1870s who used the corporate model to start, you know, ice cream shops. I honestly, like, even Emma Goldman did something like this. But a corporation is just a freaking term. Corporations originally, so 230, 40 years ago, and they had to be approved for the state specifically for stuff that nobody could do on their own, like building a road, building a dam,
right.
building
right,
a canal.
Right, right.
We
yeah,
are.
They had their capital amount limited. They had their
them apples.
Their goals,
you know?
Limited. They were limited by law, but now they're limitless.
Well, they didn't have the vertical integration that they do now. I mean, you have
right.
what, four or five corporations that own the media.
Right.
You have, you know, three or four corporations that own vast markets. So they just didn't have that quite the monopoly power. I mean, you had the Standard Oils and stuff like that, but eventually
right.
they got broke up. I don't think there's a politician today that would even think about trying to do something like that.
Oh, I know.
Breaking
the
up.
Antitrust division is a joke nowadays. They haven't done anything worthwhile in years, and they won't for the foreseeable future. But, you know, we're strangling as a result of this in the meantime, literally and figuratively, and that's our challenge. We've got to overcome this.
The huge problem is that all of these strangle-holding corporations own the leadership of the planet. It's not just America, and it does include China. It does include Russia.
Oh, yeah, it does.
Corporations, money grubbers, greedy bastards own the planet and the leadership of the planet.
Yep. That's
but we're the people. So where are the
people? There's a couple of more interesting points being made in the chat group that I'd like to sort of bring up, too. Janelle, she says, in addition to capitalism, the conversation also starts to include industrial civilization that is destroying the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is it our very lifestyle or our viewpoint on Earth as being just one huge resource? Is that the problem, the fundamental problem?
Well, there's that mindset that some have about, this planet was put here for our use, and we can do with it what we want and all that stuff, and we know better, but a lot of people still follow that mentality.
You know, that's a product of the one God religious ethic that began taxing the community to control it. You know that, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a personal opinion. And here
isn't it Christianity that says that Earth is their domain and basically can do anything they want to with it? I mean, they're supposed to be good stewards, but
right.
A good steward can be defined by, you know, maximizing a profit. So
here's
sort of like where the problems start happening, right? We have four different perspectives on how it's a problem in the general way that the planet's being poisoned and scorched and dumped full of radiation poisoning and all sorts of stuff in it. But the commonality here should be, how do we solve this? Let's not worry about, man, you know, is it just the fact that we've had too much monotheistic religion? I'll agree with some of that, but do I agree with 83% of that or 77% of that? Well, that might matter, but it matters way less than us beating these motherfuckers.
Right.
And so here's the thing. We start, if I'm interested in food justice, you're interested in eco justice, you're interested in housing justice. I'm going to say something old school and leftist here. They're all fucking connected. We need to get together, and when you're fighting for your house, I'll find that when you're fighting against your shady landlord in the bank, oh, my God, there's some big finance behind there. When we're trying to get GMO labeling, oh, my God, check that freaker out. You know, there's Cargill and Monsanto are in our companies, and it's actually some huge finance again behind them. What we find is that when we actually go, you know what, I agree with him for this for a good reason. I know we have some detailed differences, but I want to stand up for a human being, and it's just a leap of faith. We got to make that for other people. And if you're going to make a leap of faith, IMO, you can make it for God on your personal time. For time we share, we should make it for human beings.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
Good point.
Yep.
Very true.
And I'm trying to not, it sounds fluffy, but I promise you, this is actually like a mechanical. This is something that pays off massive dividends later, because that neighborhood that the union showed up and said, stop your goddamn stopping frisk. And, you know, let's say the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers shows up on Fifth Avenue, the Con Ed workers, you know, let's say they lock down the freaking street against the cops because the cops are beating the hell out of these, you know, 86% of stop and frisk are black and Latino males in New York City. It's clearly a situation of racism. Now, if the union had showed up for them, how many of those kids would be right outside that Con Ed factory right now during the lockout?
And the big mystery is why didn't the union show up?
Well, see, this is what I'm saying. We need to sort of, you know, they've got their homegrown interests. We need to look out for meat and potatoes. And let's not get into political fights because we might lose some chips. No. Mm-hmm. It's time to take the leap of faith. Lose chips. Eat the shit. You know, like, eat the proverbial dirt on this one. You need to go out there and sacrifice for other human beings. And that's when we'll actually find that the really big solidarity is shared. And the stuff we disagree on is sort of backyard stuff. The stuff we agree on is front yard. And, you know, I'm going to confess something to you folks here. I like eating chicken liver. I don't know if that's disgusting to people, but it is to a lot of Americans. Koreans love it. I'm Romanian-born, so I freaking love it. I think it's like a delicacy. Some people can't even stomach the smell of it. You know what I don't do? I don't throw my chicken liver out the freaking window. I don't try to slap people with it. I have it in my house, and nobody bothers me, and I don't try to judge other people for not liking chicken liver.
Right.
Well, maybe
right.
for stuff that's not outside our kitchen, for stuff that's not, you know what I mean, that's just for us. Let's not judge other people on these things. Let's actually look for the stuff we share together in our front yards. You know?
Yeah, we shouldn't be fighting amongst ourselves. We should be taking that energy and uniting against the 1% and against the people that are standing in our way. You know, there's a lot of oppression going on right now. I'm going to segue into this for a bit, Gwen, because you wanted me to remind you about it. But what's been going on in Anaheim and other places has been terrible. You know, when the police are oppressive like that, you know, it just shows that the 1% does not have an adequate answer to the challenges of Occupy, because all they can force on you is oppression. That's all they can do is they can shoot you in the back without you looking, and, you know, that's not good enough.
Well, you know, but folks, you know, there's a lot of video of what happened there. This is, you know, like they call it like a near riot happened. I don't know if you folks saw the video. No, this was a police-enforced beating, you know, to tell the community, shut up after they shot another man, another unarmed man in the back.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's all they can offer is repression. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy shouldn't have been shot in the first place just because he was running down the street. Why not shoot, you know, 10 feet to one side of him to slow him down? No, they got to shoot him right in the back, and then as he falls, they got to shoot him in the head. That's murder in my book.
Well, here's the other thing. Folks should really go to Europe sometimes, check out the cops there. Their cops would not needed to have, you know, shot this guy because they would have caught him 2 minutes ago if he was up to something. You know, they don't have guns. They don't often need much more than a whistle and, you know, a pretty good IQ, a nice job, and, you know, they do a lot of push-ups. But they're also very, very accountable to the community. So it's different. If you act out of line, if you're a cop, you can get your ass beat by the community. Now, if you act out of line and you're a cop and the community comes out and say, hey, man, you shot this kid in the street. This is like the 400th kid in the last 20 years in California that they've shot unarmed in the freaking street?
It's so ridiculous.
Folks
are
going to notice a pattern there.
Right.
You know? Now, when they show up to the streets, and you folks can disagree about the Second Amendment and stuff like that. I don't think that would have stopped the repression. I was going to, that would have made it even worse, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So the cops went after them with beanbags, all this other stuff. My opinion, it's funny what you can't call an uprising anymore. It's funny what is criminalized. We have over, my count is over 20,000 folks were involved in Occupy that in some ways will have a mark on their record that indicates that they're a criminal that will kind of ruin some portion of what they can achieve in life.
Mm-hmm.
So we're starting to criminalize social activity, social dissent.
Yeah.
That's
we're,
something
well,
that
look
needs-
at the drones they're using, the surveillance drones. I mean, we're under assault, let's face it, by the 1%. And they're coming up with
well,
all kinds
of... Well, when
did
this start? When did this start? I mean, it was there before, but I honestly have never seen it so bad since we started saying to the bankers, hey, your receipts are BS, and we're not going to pay you back on this junk debt.
Very
you know?
True. Very true. Good observation. Yep. Very,
it
very true.
It happened 120 years ago. Fortunately, you know, I'm kind of a history nerd. You know, there's uprisings in Europe and in America over this exact same thing. The banks at a certain point, and the banks are the ones who encourage the nations to take out debt after debt after debt after debt.
You bet
right?
they do. Yep, very
and
true.
And after a certain while, they're like, oh, yeah, no, now you get double A rating unless
mm-hmm.
you pay us back all this money here, here, and here. So
yeah,
it's funny.
Right.
You know, it's sort of like I grew up right here, man. I grew up on like on the Donk and Putnam on, between like Bushwick and Ridgewood. You know what that sounds like to me? Like the freaking crack dealer on the corner who would try to give the crackheads like deeper and deeper like a tag to like $200, $300, $400, $500. But then the crackhead would be hooked. And then you'd be like, well, now you start got to start paying me back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they've done the same thing with our economy. They've junked us with debt, and now we've got, like, heroin debt in our economy, and there's almost no way to quit it without at least, like, you know, getting some back to slap away the itches.
Right, right. Yeah, and this austerity tactic that they're using is it's despicable.
Economic hitman.
Exactly.
Oh, yes.
Very good. Good way to put it, David.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
So, and,
well, I mean, there's a book, Economic Hitman, and it's
okay.
I recommend it to anybody. It's
good.
The policies
I'll look it up.
Of oh yeah. I would highly recommend it.
Yeah.
It will open your eyes.
Mm, yeah.
You know, but by that very notion, I wonder when we should start a progressive grassroots movement to use the RICO laws to make these effing bankers and stockbrokers and hedge funders pay for any of the hundreds of suicides that have happened from the foreclosed homes, the lost pensions. That we need to start a RICO law movement in this country because that is criminal. That is absolutely criminal.
Well, that's
criminal.
The thing is the banks have gotten too much power. I mean, there's not a politician today that would even try to prosecute a single Wall Street crook.
There isn't a single Wall Street lawyer.
No, there isn't.
Or
I mean, they've gotten
gone
too
to jail.
Big. They have too much power.
And the bastards
and,
all belong in jail, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh,
but none
yeah,
of them
but
have
I
gone.
Mean, there's not a politician that's going to pursue them.
For Christ's sake, they wrecked the entire world economy. They damn near put us into another Great Depression. And what has happened? They're business as usual. They got bailed out, and
it's
business
it's
as usual. It's
worse. I mean,
worse.
Think about it. It's worse. They've gotten even bigger than what they were when the crisis, the economic meltdown occurred.
Yeah.
It's worse than it was.
Mm-hmm.
And you get everything sort of distilled in this attitude. Remember a few weeks ago when Jamie Dimon was, like, taking a task?
Oh, yeah.
You remember
yeah.
his smug-ass, smuggy-smug arrogance?
Yeah.
Well, he wasn't taking the task. He
yeah,
was,
okay, that's what I mean. That's what I mean.
Yeah,
he
I mean, he was like, can I validate your parking ticket, Mr. Dimon? And,
yeah,
and,
he was,
can
he
I
was
get
put
coat,
on the
Mr.
hot
Dimon?
Seat for an instant, and that was about it, you know.
Yeah, it was sad to watch. I mean, it really was depressing.
Yeah, no, it was honestly like, it seemed like a dad who was pissed off that he had to turn around the station wagon, you know what I mean? I told
exactly.
the kids I'll turn around. And...
Exactly.
Like, you know who's in charge here, fellas. You're calling me to Congress? Please.
Yeah, really. He had that smug look, you know, and it's like, he was going to say any second, okay, guys, I've had just about enough of this. I'm leaving.
Yeah.
Is the farce over? No. Okay.
Well, and the point is that this pattern keeps inundating itself. It keeps winning the day because... people, the majority of people are plugged into information. You know, information, that's the currency. That's the true currency
mm-hmm.
is information. You know, it's not really money. Money's an illusion that we're playing a game with for
mm-hmm.
the bankers.
Mm-hmm.
The real currency is information, and the majority of people – it comes back to circle with where we began the show with. And like Manny pointed out, David's his example of proselytization, we really do need to keep informing. It's part of our job as the minority to inform the public.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's where we have a little bit of an opportunity. I mean, we still have somewhat of a social media that where you can express and try to bring forth some facts.
Right.
I mean, that still seems to be working somewhat. And as long as we still have that, we have this window of opportunity to still get this information out there to try to inform people.
Very true. And you know, if I can just say for a moment, just pat our own selves on the back for just a little bit, we've done a great job over the years with not only the Facebook group, but also our own individual blogs. I mean, look at David, you weren't aware of ALEC until last year.
You brought it up with your ALEC post, and now I have it as a permanent link on ALEC Exposed on the site.
Exactly, and I'm so glad you did. That's great. You know, and there are all kinds of examples like that.
Writers who actually left impressed writers in the blogosphere that actually is informing and overwhelming MSM when they have to go and bring these issues up. I mean,
That's a good sign. And we need
in a way, some of the mainstream media is actually being drug kicking and screaming into some of these facts, and some of the bloggers out there aren't allowing them to ignore some of these subjects.
And I think
it sort of becomes embarrassing to them when the bloggers are beating them at their own game and bringing forth the truth.
I think global warming is another case in point. We never heard about that 10, 15 years ago, but all of a sudden, within the last few years, we've heard a great deal about it, and they poo-pooed it at first, and then they change it to climate change, but it means the same thing. And, people are actually talking about it, and some people are doing something about it.
But, Jack, when I was in college, it was called the greenhouse effect, and science was telling us then, in the late 70s.
But it's slowly grown until now. It's a household word.
It is. You're right there.
And that's important. And the more houses that know, the better. And that's our job.
And exactly to this point, why we can't sacrifice the space between us and get smug and rude with each other is because we are, as you folks mentioned now, unfortunately, most of the time we're the outlets. There's no CNN. For us, there's just us, the People's News Network, us sharing through each other from, across the globe.
Right.
And so when we burn those bridges, for folks that we mostly agree with, we're giving a free pass to the 1% on this one. We're like, our last back-end communication with each other is kind of dying a little bit, I remember, if it wasn't for this show, as a matter of fact, and Gwen, a few years back, I was able to point to it in a lot of the other work, thanks to Gwen, and that's how I was able to contribute on the Brave New Films, Coke Exposed, and the Coke University project.
Right.
But it was, again, through a big effort. So what is the difference between a crowd and a mob? A mob demands that you all have the same view, that we all be cowed and act in an emotional unity. Well, that's not a crowd. And a crowd, when we're operating in the crowd, I get to hear great ideas from Jack, from Dave, from Gwen, from folks on the chat room. We can sort of democratically hear each other out because we've decided not to be the most important voice in the room. And when we're talking about a mob, we're only talking about one voice. And that's kind of corny. It's kind of like a dictatorship, and it's kind of dysfunctional. There's a huge function in a crowd, in crowd democracy, and in crowdsourcing that we're sort of just starting to play with a little bit. If we can sort of just give each other a little bit of elbow space, we might end up dancing really, really nice sort of progressive ways into the future,
Very good point. Very good.
Well, another thing I'd like to bring up, and if I may, is that by giving information to the people out there, we also have a responsibility to do due diligence and make sure that what we're reporting is not bunk that can discredit whatever you've done before.
Unlike a lot of the rightist blogs, we aren't just setting forth opinion. We back it up with fact.
That's right.
some of the stuff that's out there in the blogosphere, it's pathetically laughable because it is so full of crap. It's like a Rush Limbaugh rant. There's 1% truth and 99% absolute garbage. And
they're still on that birth certificate thing. I mean, jeez.
Yeah, how utterly ridiculous.
This unfortunate tragedy that has gone on in outside of Denver is being by that right wing clear channel crapola down the street from me here is out there already pushing the idea that this was something that was done, that this fellow that they caught was somebody
a liberal.
What they call the black hawk of Occupy.
Oh,
which angered me greatly.
Yeah.
It's a lie, but it's going to be shoved out into MSM space.
Yeah.
Well, all activists have become Sacco and Vanzetti now. Feel me?
Right.
If you're a member of ours, you need to think of yourself like an anarchist in Chicago, my friend. They're looking to put your name on. You need to have witnesses that you didn't commit a crime on you. You know, this is another reason we can't break our networks. We're each other's best safety valves for these sorts of things.
Exactly.
Well, no,
if
one of us gets arrested, we can coordinate some sort of Kickstarter fund for a lawyer or make sure people show up at the precinct so we're not disappeared into, you know, one of New York's weird kind of like.
We've got to watch each other's backs.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I bring up the example of Danny Johnson, the one that was doing the Walk Occupy. And how people came together and gave him support for lawyers and everything, and he's still fighting that. But that's one thing where we can really shine is come together as a family and give support for the people that may be arrested or need some other information and the greater number of people that can put forth a little effort. That's strength in numbers.
Right, there
that's
is.
That's why Occupy is so important. It really is. Even
that's
if
why
it's
we need the numbers to grow. We can't
the embers,
we can't be turning people away.
Even if it's just banking the embers right now in certain places, like my own community, it's still the fanning of those embers will bring the flames back. We need to keep together. We need to remember. what faith, the speech that Chris Hedges made on faith and resistance.
Brilliant man. Yep. Very true.
If I could take your metaphor with the fire again, just one more step and connect it to sort of my own experience here in sort of these activist circles, what I've noticed is the folks that have sort of carried out Occupy, it's not that Occupy doesn't exist anymore, it's just evolved into like 8 other things that are very busy right now, you know?
Achieving something good. I know here in Minneapolis, in little Minneapolis, we're successful in overturning certain bank foreclosures and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's a tremendous thing.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
See, and that's what I'm saying. You know, in some way, the like corporate media does this very myopic kind of thing. Well, they're like, look, to use your metaphor, well, the fire in the fire pit's gone. Well, you know, there's like 8 torches from that fire carrying about in the land, you know,
trying to sort of fight
in individual struggles, you know, and in the corporate telling of it, see, there's no fire anymore. Yes, my friend, now the fire is in not just this little park in downtown Manhattan. It's not a symbolic fire anymore. Now we're a real movement where we are involved in real struggles against where they're going to disenfranchise 5 to 10 million voters this year. We're in the real struggles about the damping of free speech, both online and real life. You know, Occupy has grown out. And in that same tone, though, let's be honest, Occupy also inherited, like, this movement that we had to put on the shelves for 10 years. Remember the big anti-globalization movement just before 9/11 and, you know, Seattle and everything?
Right.
We put all that on the shelves
with
the terrorism and everybody shut up, know your place, is only protest in the little square. And then now we remember 10 years after 9/11. You know, so in some ways I understand, you know, that, you know, where we are now is kind of post-Occupy in some ways. That's not really true, you know, because Occupy is in these 8, 10 other movements.
It's evolved to the next stage.
What they called it is not a viral movement, but a spore movement. So it builds. Then they go to squash it. Good, squash it. It's going to spore into 16 other little places that are now going to start building and building and building.
Yeah, and we're seeing in little bits and pieces, we're seeing the effect of that, and it's very positive to see this. And we encourage it to keep growing, and it will, as long as we keep stoking the flame with our individual blogs and communications.
One should not underestimate the amount of energy that was put into dissipating and fragmentizing the Occupy. I mean, the Department of Homeland Security and other forces did spend a lot of effort in trying to fragment that movement.
Right, but they really weren't able to do so, you know. So that's great. Well, that's a big victory.
Well, what happened was, I don't know, do you folks remember there was this narrative? And I was following, I was honestly adding about 25, 30 articles about this stuff a week at the time. And I'm watching the coverage, I'm looking at the coverage I'm looking at in the independent media, and I'm watching the corporate media, and the corporate media starts building this sort of a festival atmosphere about, look at the center of Occupy Albany right here, just the inside, the geographic. Not the protest that they went over there. You know, Occupy during the day was busy going all over the city and protesting and being in solidarity movements, standing up at the strikes. And, you know, Occupy was
right. Busy
during the day. It didn't just sit in what they deemed sort of like a protest festival. That stopped trying to paint us. The corporate media will paint us as hippy-dippy sort of like liberals, which is kind of insulting. But what was actually happening was Occupy was busy with everything else. So then the narrative became really big about, look at sort of the sights and sounds of Occupy. This one place in Occupy Albany or in San Francisco, in Oakland, they did the same thing. They focused on the place. And then that one weekend, they kicked ass in, like, what, like 11, 12 cities at a time? The cops
started
punching heads. And and nobody in the media was, like, beyond. You would get beat yourself as you try to make your way into the park in all 11 cities, right?
Right.
So, you know, I think they made a great point there.
Yeah.
You know, history will bury some of Occupy, but you really are not going to be able to bury the consciousness of those 20,000 people you shoved through the system.
Very
because
true.
Because all they did was take you on for the First Amendment, public assembly, free speech,
right.
Speech, and I'm asking for redress of my grievances.
Right, exactly right. Very true. Very, very true. That's guaranteed by the Constitution, constitutionalists, you know.
Gentlemen, we are at the top of the hour, and I would like to mention one last thing here before we close. Janelle brought up the point that people are so focused on survival they don't have time. And from her perspective, and I know from a lot of us, so we wonder what's going to happen to change that. Mm-hmm. And I would say that the conversation we had this evening pointed to the most positive direction that we have, and that is to keep the message alive, to remember what Mr. Hedges said with faith and resistance, and to keep walking forward. I come from and defined as an occupier, nonviolent position on this. I think something that needs to happen is that unification of all of us sticking together and holding to, just like the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, Manny, thank you for that insightful post in Roundtree 7. There's a lot of food for thought in there for everybody.
Well, thank you, folks, for having me. And sort of my final thought on this one is, if we're going to be about service politics and community politics, then we should, you know, when we disagree, maybe we should look to be there for each other and put our disagreements away. Solve it by showing solidarity.
Absolutely.
Absolutely, Manny. Thanks, Manny.
Yeah, thank you, Manny.
Thanks, guys.
David, thank you for being with us today. I really appreciate it. And in that vein, I would remind everyone that this Sunday show, and indeed all the shows here, are sponsored by Roundtree 7, and that's roundtree7.com. A blog that brings knowledge to the social consciousness. Boy, I'll get tongue-tied one day.
Well, until next week, everybody, good night, and have a good, productive, progressive week.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Really appreciate it. Everybody
thank you,
in the room, thank you. And also brought to you by DaughtersOfISIS.com. Please look for us. We'll be up in about a month. Until next Sunday, Jack, Cesia, everybody be well, everybody be safe, and keep the faith.
Ditto.
Good night.
Good night.